sort of.
And welcome to this week's edition of Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, coming to you live from Rochester, New York, via the Paranormal Radio Network, and also on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. For more information on the show and on my guests, visit our website at www.keyholepublishing.com. And as always, I want to hear from you guys. If you're listening live with me tonight, join me on the message board, and you can discuss the program and add your questions and comments. You can either go to ParanormalRadioNetwork.com, and you can join us in the virtual auditorium. You can participate in the conversation there through instant messaging. You can also email me anytime with your questions and comments. My email address is kdolan@rochester.rr.com, or you can call into the show toll-free at 1-877-786-0562. And if you missed any of that, it's all on the webpage at www.keyholepublishing.com. And before I get started tonight, I just have a couple of announcements. I want to mention one more time that the International UFO Congress is still accepting registrations for their annual conference in Laughlin, Nevada. This is a week-long event. If you haven't been there before, definitely check it out. It is held at the end of February at the Aquarius Resort and Casino in Laughlin. There will be more than 30 presentations, 30 different speakers from around the world, as well as a film festival, a Meet the Speaker cocktail party on the Wednesday night, and an awards banquet at the end of the week, which is for the film festival. It's surprisingly affordable, actually. It begins at about, I think, $539 per person, and that's for the entire event, including the hotel room for the whole week. So on top of that, all you have to pay for is your plane ticket. And I'll tell you that even from across the country where I am, the plane tickets are not that bad right now, so check it out. The temperatures, the way they are here in upstate New York right now, like single digits and snow coming down in whiteouts, it's making me crazy. I am thinking hard about Laughlin. And I will definitely be there. I'm going to be there for the full week as media relations director, so if you guys do get a chance to come out, stop by the registration desk and take a look. Stop in and say hi. One other thing is that this year is the last time this event will be held in Laughlin, and it's the last year it's going to be hosted by the Browns. After this year's event, it's going to be taken over by Open Minds, which is based out of Phoenix, Arizona, and I believe they're going to be moving the event to Phoenix next year. So if you've had any thoughts about checking out the Laughlin Conference, this is the year to do it. Go to www.ufocongress.com. And you can find all the information on speakers, registration, travel, everything you need to know is right there. Also, some of you on the show may have heard me mention my day job, and if you haven't, you might be wondering why I keep putting up balloon-related news on my webpage. If you don't know, I'm an administrative assistant to Larry Moss, who is a world-renowned balloon sculptor. Through his company, which is called Airigami, that's A-I-R-I-G-A-M-I, which he calls the fine art of folding air. He wants to put on an event called Elastic Park, which is a takeoff of Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. This would involve a tour across the country, ideally from one museum to another, of full-size, and I mean actual full-size, larger than human beings, replicas of dinosaurs, as you would see them in museums. It's pretty amazing. He did this once before and wants to bring it out again. So if you want to see pictures of these balloon sculptures of dinosaurs and find out what you can do to help make this happen, go to his website at www.airigami.com. That's A-I-R-I-G-A-M-I. Now, my guest this evening, I'm finally getting down to the good stuff here, is well known in UFO and abduction research. He has spoken all around the world and on many radio programs. You've probably met him in person if you've ever been to Roswell, New Mexico. He calls himself the Alien Hunter and is credited with discovering alien implants and also the phenomenon of fluorescence on the bodies of alien abductees. Our local UFO meetup group here in Rochester, New York, recently had the pleasure of talking with him over the phone during an entire meeting. It was really great. We were expecting a quick call, maybe, you know, fairly brief talk, and it just kept going on because nobody wanted to stop. We were having so much fun. Very informative, lots of fun to talk with, and we all really appreciate his taking the time to spend that whole evening with us. So please join me in welcoming Daryl Sims to Through the Keyhole. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Karen, and hello to your guest there. I'm so glad to be here tonight.
Thanks. Daryl, I got your new book, actually, Alien Hunter, Evidence and Truth About Alien Implants. Thanks so much for sending it out so quickly. And, oh, my God, it's pretty amazing.
what you were expecting, I don't think.
Wow. Well, for any listeners who might be new to the whole alien abduction phenomenon, I wonder if we could just talk a little bit about just sort of an overview of the topic for anyone who's new to this. How common is this?
Well, the implant phenomenon in particular, you mean? Is that what we're discussing?
Well, starting off with abduction phenomena.
Okay,
you know,
great. That's even
the
better.
UFO thing, you know, people who maybe have heard that there are lights in the sky but are not real familiar with how widespread is the phenomenon of people believing they've been in contact with these people or have been taken by them?
Well, it's a great way to start off. To begin with, the abduction phenomena has been around for a very long time. And some people think that it started with around Betty and Barney Hill and that sort of thing. That's pretty unlikely that it would start with a couple who happened to be taken in an event, very well documented and excellent, very well documented by Stanton Friedman and Kathy Martin, of course. But to think that they were the only two is doesn't make any sense. But the reason many people believe that kind of is the highlight of it is because most people didn't report this stuff commonly as in times past. And there's, of course, been numerous studies, and some funded by the Bob Bigelow, the billionaire out in Las Vegas. And in that one particular study, the Roper poll, showed that several million people have had UFO-like events or related events. And, in fact, that those were just the ones that reported this based on the survey. That's not people that they never questioned or never talked to. That's just the people they did ask. And if that's true, several million people were involved in this phenomenon in some way or another, then this thing is of immense proportions. And of course, it goes back to the old story, you know, well, how many of these stories are true? That kind of doesn't make sense either when you think of it in that light. The question is, if one story is true,
mm-hmm.
you have a phenomenon. Well, that's all that matters. And
it's true. If it happens one time, then it exists.
Yes. And that, I think the big issue for me, in my own personal event as an abductee myself, was that I didn't know who in the world to report it to. And the big issue is many abductees and contactees simply didn't bother to tell anybody and are not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is 81 years old, and she just found out just this last year that I was an abductee. And she said, that just cannot be true, because it's just not true. She said, I knew you did the investigations, but you were never an abductee. That's just not true. And I said, but Mom, it is. And I said, it wasn't just me. And I said, there's some other members in our family that are abductees as well. And she was just mortified to hear this. 81 years old and just found out.
So she was mortified that she didn't know? I mean, I'm thinking, as a mother myself, I would feel really bad if I found out something like this was happening.
Well, she did. She did. It's kind of another sad point, but it's almost amusing to me in another sense of the word, because it happened to me.
Yeah.
But I was in Brazil, in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, and an individual was talking to me. He says, gosh, you know, that's, he was a pretty famous person in the media area of, in the ufology years ago, and he said, you know, this is really amazing that that people, you know, just don't tell all these people about their events. And I said, well, I personally never told much of anything to anybody. And he says, well, what do you mean? I said, well, my wife was reading a book here a while back called Secret Life by the Temple University professor, David Jacobs. And she said, that's just horrible. She says, honey, do you realize these people never tell anybody about their, they have a secret life that they live. And then it hit her like a ton of bricks. And she looked at me and says, oh, my God, do you have a secret life? And I said, sweetie, all abductees do.
Yeah.
We all do. And she started crying. And the guy said, well, why was she crying? And I said, because there's nothing she could do about it.
Yeah, well, that puts your finger right on it. And that's what's upsetting as a parent. And I know you mentioned when during the call-in to our UFO meetup group, as a parent yourself, I mean, how you feel when you think about children going through this.
I tell you, when and I've said this before, it was one thing for them to come to me and to take me and to do the things they did. I could live with that, and did live with it, and lived privately with that, very quietly. I mean, I didn't tell anybody, and I trusted my daddy more than anybody, and I never told him a thing. But I'll tell you, when they came and got my son at 6 years old, that started a war for me. I mean, that ended it right there. No more peace, no more ignoring, no more quietness, and that started the hunt for me right there. I mean, you can come after me and do whatever you want to do and do these various things and so on, but when you come after my children, it's not the same thing anymore. It's out of the theoretical, and it's out of the philosophical and so on. It's preservation now.
Yeah, no, it occurs to me that you and I are talking about this. I mean, we're both pretty familiar with the phenomenon, but again, for the benefit of any listeners who might be new to this topic, we're both talking about this as a really terrible, traumatic thing. Can you talk a little bit about what happens during an abduction? Why is it so traumatic?
Certainly can, and I'd probably to be as... to be as clear to your audience as possible, probably should use myself as an example, but it's certainly not limited to me. I mean, as I've discussed this with Bud Hopkins and many others, you know, I said, isn't it amazing that we can sit here and someone who's had a real, true event, when they start telling us this amazing, bizarre stuff, we can almost tell them what the story's going to be. We pretty much have a pretty good idea on what happened to them based on many other events of other people. And he said, that's true. And I said, by that token, I said, you can also realize that these entities are predictable. I mean, they do the same thing, so therefore they're predictable as we are, and that's why we were so easy to capture. But the long and the short of it is in 1952, when I was approximately 4 years old, I was in bed, and of course I'm telling the story now from my previous, I'm telling it from the fact that I know a lot more about the story now than when I was at age four. But I had just been brought back to my room, and of course I didn't know this at the time, I didn't know what was going on, and I all of a sudden sat up in bed, not scared, not frightened, not paralyzed, not anything, and I noticed someone was in my room. And I see he's leaving, he's walking toward the wall. I can't figure out why would anybody walk toward a wall?
The wall, yeah.
No, he had come in that way and just had gone through it. So I thought to myself, what is that? And he heard me think that. He turned around immediately as I thought that in my little head. And at that point, he realized he had a huge mistake. He was supposed to leave and not, I wasn't supposed to remember anything. Generally, the reason many people don't know much about their abductions or only pieces of it or have these horrific fears of a face of an alien being or a certain area of road, a stretch of road that they're horrified to go down, all these different things. These are just memory markers that happen to people, and they don't remember much about it, but they do. Their body remembers everything. Doesn't matter how much your brain, and on a conscious level, can remember. It is clear that your body remembers everything, and there are all kinds of neat things you can do to test that and to show it. But your body will react immediately. For instance, if you've gone down a certain particular road and all of a sudden you have this horrific fear of that particular part of the road, there's probably a pretty good reason. That may be where your contact actually took place. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they like to do is to allow you not to remember. And when you do remember, it's usually a mistake. And if they do want you to remember, it's usually, part of a program that they're running on you, and it's not necessarily the truth of what happened, but it's important for them and for their cause, whatever that may be, for you to believe or to remember it in some particular way.
So is that what some people call screen memories?
That is true. That's a term that was developed by Sigmund Freud, and he called it a screen memory. And a screen memory is simply a cover. For instance, like if someone was, and I'll give you a case in point, and a lady went blind, and they couldn't figure out why she was blind. I mean, this is an unusual phenomenon, but it does happen. She went blind, and there was no medical reason for her going blind. Well, after somebody had worked with her after a period of time, they realized that she had actually witnessed a murder, and it was one of her relatives.
Oh, my God.
She did not want to see that again. So her blindness was due to that hysteria. And by the same token, that is like a screen memory. She didn't want to recall, didn't want to remember, and so on. I mean, just a young person, she remembered that, and then this blindness hit, and she didn't want to remember. In the case of alien abduction, the entities, whoever or whatever they are, they leave with you an illustration or something like a bad dream, or you made this up, or you were having sleep paralysis, various different things. And in my case, I just didn't remember anything until I opened my eyes and I would see this creature, a long, skinny, spindly creature with a large, he was pure white, large bulbous head, perfectly round, black eyes. And
perfectly round, not those.
They were not the elliptical version at all. And some people ask me that. Well, why did you see the round ones? And so, well, I don't know. I didn't make this stuff up. If I'd made it up, I'd probably told what everybody else did or something. But it wasn't the Hollywood version, the elliptical eyes that I saw. It was a perfectly round one. And several other people have reported this in the time of the 50s and 60s. And when this question is asked of me, I sometimes give the answer, well, I probably saw a Ford model, and you probably saw the Lexus version. I mean, it's just an upgrade, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We can talk more about that later. But the bottom line for me in that event was, I didn't know what it was or why it was there, and I'm just 4 years old, and, I mean, it doesn't have any clothes on. I can't figure out what's it. It's winter. It's cold. Why is he not wearing any clothes? And who is this guy? I can't figure anything out. I'm not afraid. Sitting up in bed, he turns around. When he does, what's the first thing? If somebody's nude, they turn around and face you. What do you think you're going to look at? Well, little kids are going to look at the top. I noticed he didn't have a
teepee. Is it a boy or a girl?
That's right. He wasn't a boy or a girl. He didn't have a teepee. He didn't have genitalia. He didn't have a belly button like I did. He didn't have memory glands. He didn't have anything. And I'm sitting there scratching my little head, wondering. I mean, his mouth was so small you could barely see it. And little tiny places where a nose should have been, little holes there. But almost no features on the face, and I was so shocked. And of course, his eyes were huge compared to the other features, and I was just beside myself. And of course, now after 40 some years of investigating, I can look at that same imagery now through that little boy's eyes and tell you that if he doesn't have genitalia, he doesn't reproduce. If he doesn't have a belly button, he didn't get here the way we did. He wasn't born. He was hatched. He may have been cloned, or he may have been genetically engineered, or even a biomechanical model of some sort. But the point is, he didn't get here the way we did. And, of course, that should interest us to no end, not what is he, but in my viewpoint, we should be looking the other direction. Why are they so interested? I mean, if they come from outer space, or if they come from another dimension, or if they come from the inner Earth, or wherever they come from, they've been here for thousands of years looking at us, and they're fascinated with something about us, and we don't seem to get the picture. We seem to keep turning the whole picture back toward them, saying, oh, they're alien beings from another planet, and they're here to study us, and they're here. We don't know any of that. We don't know that. And the amazing thing to me was when he was standing there looking at me, his eyes seemed to move. There was some kind of a movement about his face or near his eyes, and I'm not sure what happened, but immediately I became instantly paralyzed when I saw that movement. And I have no explanation for how that happens, only that immediately I became paralyzed and with a fear that I never, ever experienced my entire life. Again, after 40 years of investigating, I can comment on that fear. It wasn't a fear I had because now I was seeing a monster or something in my room. I wasn't even afraid of it. Wasn't afraid at all. Wasn't paralyzed until that moment. What happens is he transfers his fear to you. And for the first time in his life, during abductions, he gets to not have that fear. He loses it. And it's almost like a drug to him because it's transferred to you. They live in such a militaristic-type society. It's difficult to even explain it to people because people have got these preconceived notions that, well, they're this and they're that. How would you know that? How do you come to those conclusions?
I always feel like I must drive people crazy because they ask me things when we go to conferences or, you know, wherever I talk to people, they'll ask me, well, what do you think about the aliens? Why are they here? What are they, you know, where'd they come from? Like, I don't know. How would I know that? You know, yeah, I've read the literature, and yeah, I've talked with a lot of people, and I've gotten other people's opinions, and yes, I've read what facts we've been able to collect, but there's some indication that they can shapeshift or they can change the way we perceive them. So how can any of us say we know anything? All we
fascinating
know is what
point you bring up about shapeshifting. There was something that happened when he started coming toward me once I received this paralysis, this instantaneous fear that was, I mean, I've never felt anything like it. I mean, my parents never let me watch monster movies, or I don't even know if they had them back then, that sort of thing. So, I mean, it didn't make any sense at all what was going on. And as he came toward me, I mean, I was so shaking. I pushed so hard against my little bed was against the wall. I pushed so hard that it literally made a V in the against the wall from the push when I pushed out, and I fell. My little arms and everything were wrapped up in the covers now, and I fell with my little legs wrapped in the covers hanging up on the bed, and then my head now is on the floor, and the worst child's nightmare happened. Imagine you're laying on the bottom of your floor. You were laying on the floor looking toward the edge of the bed where you know it's walking, and all of a sudden it lifts up the covers and sticks its huge bulbous head right next to your face.
Oh, my God.
And that is exactly, at this moment, all this is important, to study the abduction event very carefully, because this is where things happen. When he gets that large black eye next to you, the very first thing he's going to do within a quarter of a second is to transfer a screensaver memory to you. And that memory made that, and it's the true false memory syndrome. It literally is. Because that what he's fixing to transfer you never happened. He's going to transfer you to you if you go into one program, if they want to run you into the contactee program, you're going to be in the school of higher consciousness. We are your parents. Your parents are not really your parents. They've been lying to you all this time. I mean, there are a whole line of whoppers they just tell people, and people seem to experience this alien Stockholm syndrome, and they just buy into it. Other people who don't buy into it, like me, even at 4 years old, I realized that this is not true. And as he programmed me, he tried to change the image of, and I'm making a clear distinction here. He did not change into a clown. He changed my thinking of what his of himself. He wanted me to think of that representation as a clown. And as a result, I ended up with a clown phobia, and many other abductees do too. And yeah, that's where it comes from. That's the screen. So that we would believe a nonsensical, ridiculous story or dream, and this event couldn't have happened because there are no clowns underneath your bed. So therefore, you wouldn't believe that. The only problem is, I remembered my event, and I kept shaking my head back and forth, yelling myself, no, 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 I would not allow him to change that imagery. And as I did that, the weird thing is, the imagery that he seemed to be, in other words, he was changing back to what he was. So he wasn't really shape-shifting. He was changing my consciousness of
and
him.
Do you think that he pulled an image out of your head, too? That's almost what it sounded like.
Well, they often do. They will use sometimes images of... We had a mass abduction on December 8th, 1992, a double mass abduction of eight people in two states and several cities. And one of these, they gave different screen memories to each person, and this is really amazing. They asked this one lady what she wanted, and she told them the screen server memory she wanted.
Oh, my gosh.
She wanted to see her dead brother. And she swears to this day, I mean, I know her very well, swears to me that she saw her dead brother on that spacecraft. I said, sweetie, I said, your dead brother is not on a spacecraft floating around in space out there somewhere. It isn't true. Oh, yes, it is. I saw him. I said, sweetie, there were seven other people looking at you, and they were almost laughing because they couldn't believe that you saw this little bald-headed cosmic skinhead messing with your mind, and you thought it was your deceased brother, and they're all sitting there looking at a little alien.
Oh, my gosh. That is so bad.
Don't you see what happened? She said, no, 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 that's not true. I saw my dead brother. He was deceased. He's on a spaceship, and I'm trying to get out there. I mean, it's just
so
amazing what they do to the minds of these people. I mean, it depends what you buy into.
Yeah, it's amazing what the human mind is capable of. I remember reading about an experiment in hypnotism, and a patient was hypnotized to believe that his daughter was not in the room, and he opened his eyes. She stood right in front of him, and he couldn't see her. You know, and they kept saying, well, isn't your daughter here? Don't you see her? And he said, no. And she was practically nose-to-nose with him.
It won't make any difference.
No, and then the really cool thing was they held up a wristwatch behind her and asked him what time it was, and he was able to read it.
Yes.
So how's that for bizarre? You know, he believed she wasn't there, and it truly perceived what he shouldn't have been able to see because he believed that there was nothing in the way.
That's true. That's true.
That's
very
really
unusual. Yes, it is.
But they know that about us. I mean,
they know all kinds of things about us, and the amazing thing is, and this is what I keep telling people, every time I go to a conference to speak, I'll usually start with something like, how many of you people have ever seen a UFO, and lots of hands will go up? How many of you people have ever seen anything you couldn't explain? They raise their hands. And how many of you people have ever seen one of these things up close and personal? Then there's a lot less hands go up, real slow. How many people brought something back with you? And then just only a couple hands will go up. Those are the ones.
Now that's more than I would have expected.
Real personal events where they've got implanted or something's happened like that.
Oh.
And the point is that as I tell them, I said, isn't it interesting that it's almost like I'm reading your mail? How do I know all these neat things about you? Like they claim to be your parents. And I said, you know what's really weird? Is all of you fall into one or two primary categories. You're an abductee or a contactee. A contactee being defined as someone who feels like these entities have the right to, or whatever they did to us is okay because they're superior, bigger, better, or whatever than us, and therefore it's okay. The other view, which I am more in touch with, is that as an abductee that I was taken against my will, it is not their right to do anything to me like this, and I didn't like it, and I'm not going to go along with it, especially after they got my son. And the fact is that regardless of what they did to me, and some of it was pretty horrific, regardless of what they did, I will not cooperate and I will not go along with it. And as a result, after 13 years of abduction, about 10 different events over that period of 13 years from age 4 to age 17, for 13 years, in these events, after resisting, and as isn't a good illustration, when I was age 4, it wouldn't accept the screensaver memory of him being a clown, for resisting during that 13-year period, they finally just gave up on me, I guess, and said, you know, this is a bad egg. Throw that one back. we need another fish. This is not working.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing.
But these people who come out and they become contacted by them, whoever they are, will automatically come out to become, in almost every case, and this is very rare that you ever see one that's not one of these two, a contactee or an abductee. This is just part of the programming. And the more of the programming you accept, and you will accept some of it even if you're an abductee, if you accept most of the programming, you're going to end up a contactee and you will buy into everything they do. It doesn't make a bit of difference whether they implant you. It doesn't matter whether they artificially inseminate you. It doesn't make a bit of difference. Whatever they do, it's right, it's correct, and it's probably okay, and we should just go along with it and just get over it. Whereas the abductee is never going to go along with it.
I hear that from people. You know, I talk to people, and they're like, oh, well, you know, when they come, you should just listen to everything they say, and we should follow their instructions because they're from some other system, and they know way more than we do, and we should just not think and do what they tell us.
You know, Karen, a lady came to me at a conference, and she said this right in front of everybody, so I couldn't nicely just say, well, it's just a difference of opinion. She says, you know, we test animals and we do things to them, and if there's no difference whatsoever, and they're just doing the same thing that we're doing. And I said, well, and I did everything I could to be as nice and kind and sweet. I mean, I am not a nasty guy when it comes to going after people. I just don't like to do little confrontational things, and she just would not let this go. And I said, no, that's not really a correct illustration. She said, it is. And I said, well, may I offer you one? She said, sure. I said, okay. So we're just like wild animals, just like the wild animals are that we capture and implant or do whatever, and we're doing it for their benefit, and they don't get it, and that's okay. She said, that's right. I said, so we're just like a bear or a lion or something like that. She said, that's right. And I said, okay, let's carry your metaphor out to its full extent here. So if the bear wakes up or the lion wakes up in the midst of whatever it is these scientists are doing, is it okay? What if he accidentally, or the bear or the lion hurts someone because he doesn't realize blah, 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 what's going on, and someone gets hurt or injured or even killed? Should we kill the lion? No, of course not. I said, okay. I'm okay with that. I said, that's good. I said, now, let me ask you another question. What if this lion gets abducted, and I decide to wake up anyway, whether they intended for me to or not? Now, since I'm just an animal, in your view, and just a wild animal and just a lion, is it okay if I go ahead and tear my predators apart, my captors? How immoral! I said, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be a lion. I have no morals, I have nothing. I'm the idiot. They're the ones that are in charge of the universe. I said, see how you change the rules as soon as you want me to become moral at that point when they're supposed to be the masters of the universe. I said, why do I not buy into your story? I said, you remind me of an individual that I've worked kidnapping cases before. I said, and some of these cases are so horrific, especially in the case of a little girl who gets kidnapped and gets kidnapped over and over by an individual from childhood. And this goes on for years, and they think she's making it up because there is no evidence that he did anything, and eventually they catch the guy. Mm-hmm. I said, what sentence will be administered to this horrible, evil man who did this to this child for 10 years? Well, I get life imprisonment. And I said, okay. I said, it's a true story. I said, I'm not making this up. She said, okay. I said, now, the guy happens to be bald-headed, has large black eyes, is about 3.5 feet tall. What's the sentence? Well, it doesn't apply. I said, of course it applies. It's kidnapping, young lady. I said, your child means nothing more to you than that? That he can go out and sexually molest her and do all these different things in the name of, quote-unquote, science? Why do I not believe this story? And why do I think that you don't buy that yourself? So to me, there's this huge disparity And it's kind of like the Pygmalion effect. In the legendary story of Pygmalion, the king of Cyprus, he falls in love with a statue that he made. And if you want to apply that to the abductee, basically...
No, I was thinking more like Stockholm Syndrome.
Exactly. I mean, we follow. What's the difference? I don't see. I see this huge thing that just doesn't make sense to me, and just a double standard. And well, another metaphor I like even better is the killer bees and honeybees. A honeybee to me is the contactee. This is the individual who, again, likes them for whatever reason, maybe a good reason. You know, maybe they've never had any bad experiences whatsoever, and that's okay. And so, therefore, they buy into this. But what the honeybees need to think about for just a moment is that funny little guy in the white suit running the show. He's not our friend.
Yeah.
Just because he's stealing our honey doesn't make him our friend.
Yeah.
Well, a killer bee, and unfortunately that's a mislabeling of the bee, it's just another kind of bee that is protective of its hive. It can't be fooled like the honeybee. Honeybees, they can be fooled. They can. And if you put on a little white suit and act right and do right and do all these different things and so on, you can domesticate these guys, and they'll do anything you want. They'll make all kinds of honey for you, and you steal all of it all the time, leave them enough to eat all during the winter, and they'll start all over and make tons more honey for you all along. And the question one has to ask is, if I'm a honeybee or a contactee, what is the honey that he wants, and why is he doing this? What is it he truly is after? Why me? What is this about? The killer bee, on the other hand, the abductee, and I hate the term killer bee because they don't go out, these bees do not look to go out and try to kill people or anybody. They don't do that.
Right.
But if you violate their space, you will pay the price. And they, like the American Indian, and I'm American Indian Irish, and this ties into the UFO thing as well, both of which are warriors. They always have been. And I think that's another reason that 45% of our abductees are Native American Indian Irish, because they're the killer bee phenomena. And I think the other 55% are the honeybees. These are the domesticated types that can will go along with the program. With a killer bee, won't. And my thinking is that these killer bees, or people like myself, are not going to lay down and take it. They're not going to roll over, and it's not business as usual. They're going to do everything they can to thwart you. They're going to do everything they can. And the best example I can give of it is one of our abductees recently, who is an abductee for a long time, like myself, but his events are still going on. He's also a martial artist and a friend of mine. And he's hoping one of these days that they're going to come in and do their thing and they're going to make a mistake. Well, they do make mistakes. They make huge mistakes. They can't even get your clothes on right. Sometimes they drop you off in the wrong state, the wrong city, sometimes the wrong bed or the wrong room or even outside the house. I mean, this is kind of obvious that something went on. And in his case, they came in and forgot to say, you won't remember, you're paralyzed, you can't move. And they forgot to do that. And several months ago, when they came in, this guy's two big dogs, they forgot to tell them the same thing. Nuke them, as I call it, or to put them all in this paralysis state, which they can do quite easily. And they forgot to do that to his two dogs and to him. But instantly, as soon as he wakes up and sees one of them, he grabs a sword before they can realize what's happened. He eviscerates one of them. The two dogs attack the other two of the three entities that are there. No one knows what happened, and I will soon because I'll be working with him soon. The whole story, all we know is that we have the DNA evidence, and we have looked at it. It's amazing. And the fascinating thing is that his two dogs that attacked the other two have died since then. They died because they were not able to assimilate protein after attacking these two entities and biting them.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what all that means, but it doesn't sound pleasant.
No, that sounds very unpleasant. Daryl, there are a bunch of questions popping up on the message boards, and I just want to relate a few of these. First of all, when you were talking about the honeybees and the killer bees, I had somebody who was asking what you were referring to as the honey. And I think what they meant is, what are the aliens coming to us? What are they trying to take? I took that as meaning you're equating a beekeeper coming and taking honey from the bees as the same kind of negative experience as the aliens coming and taking us.
Well, of course. The metaphor is, if you'll pardon the pun, sweet. And the reason it is sweet is because it gives answers. To me, answers are the name of the game.
Okay.
If we don't get answers, we're wasting our time. We're plodding along, and we'll be here for another 200 years trying to figure out if they're even real or not. And we need to be going after hard evidence. And the nice thing about looking at the honeybee metaphor is it is literally pregnant with meaning. It's pregnant with meaning because one has to ask certain questions. For instance, let's go back to the human illustration so that it doesn't get too bogged down in the insect illustration. When the abductees and contactees are taken, they are often subjected to certain experiments. We call them experiments. I assure you they are not experiments. They know exactly what they're doing. There's a purpose behind it. These entities will often take the sperm or the eggs, and there's probably not any abductees, or very few abductees or contactees that wouldn't say this, that don't know this, it's true. They take our eggs and sperm at some point in our experiences. Now, the question one has to ask, and I ask it very bluntly, is where is the milk factory? Why, when you take the sperm or eggs of millions of abductees or contactees, where are you taking them? I mean, it only takes a few. There's not a geneticist out there that doesn't realize that you can take just a few samplings of a population and determine huge amounts of information. What do they need millions for? It's obvious that this is not a medical, quote-unquote, experiment. This is not a genetic experiment in the sense that we understand it at all. And I hate it when people say, oh, yeah, it's so complex and we can't understand it. No, it's so complex that it's not even real. It's a ruse. Something else is going down, and you have to find out why that is. So the honey, to me, or the milk, or the eggs, or whatever you want to call it, or the pizza, as I sometimes call these guys, or they deliver the pizza, and we happen to be the pizza for the delivery that night. And
see,
the fact
what I
is,
love about talking with you, Daryl, you have this really down-to-earth, very vivid way of putting things.
Well,
that's great.
You have to just laugh after a while because this stuff just gets so bizarre and so difficult to live with. You have to finally, at some point, and many abductees do, develop a tremendous sense of humor, regardless of, I mean, I have an online support group where these people can come on, and anybody listening here is an abductee or contactee is they're welcome to do that as well. But in these support groups, that's what they're for, is support. And there's huge amounts of humor that you'll see pop out. Somebody will almost be crying one minute, and then they'll say, well, but I guess that was okay, and then they'll start making a joke of it. And you have to learn how to deal with that in other ways. So to me, that is just my way of doing that, and I hope it's non-offensive because it's not meant to be that way, but it's meant to give a little levity to an otherwise very difficult and sometimes horrific set of circumstances.
Yeah, sometimes using humor can kind of cut these things down to something manageable, because otherwise we end up being like the people who just can't get our brains around it and can't even admit that it exists.
Or fact.
Yeah, I find that, I mean, I'm sure you talk to a lot of people that way too, who just say, well, no, there's no such thing, and won't look.
Well, a perfect example is when I was at Hallam University speaking, and I had my display set up out in the hallway, and a professor walked by and says, this is all, and he gave this colorful metaphor. I said, really? He says, the biggest crock of whatever, and he just went on and on, just really nasty. And I said, really? I said, well, what do you do here, if you don't mind me asking? And he says, I'm a scientist. I said, no, you're not. Yes, I am. I said, no, you're not. I am a scientist. I said, no, you're not. I said, you've already proven that. I said, what is the basis of science? He said, what is it? It's based on the scientific investigation, the scientific inquiry. He said, that is correct. And he went on describing the process. And I said, you used absolutely none of those things. when you approach this subject. Not even one. Should you have asked me, is there any evidence or any engineering evidence of this whatsoever, I would have shown you 400 pages of engineering work concerning this particular implanted object. You didn't ask for that, though, did you? You, like a magician or like a psychic, seem to know the answers to everything without ever looking at anything. Now, that's not science, is it? You're a psychic, is what you really are. I am not. Yes, you are. You're a psychic because you already know the answers to everything. So, therefore, you're not a scientist, so I don't really feel I have to answer any of your questions because you're not even a scientist. You know, wait, I want to look at your science. I want to look at this stuff. I said, oh, so now you want to play the game, huh? I said, no, if anybody walked into your office and any discovery you had and said the same thing you just told me, you'd throw them out the front door. I said, that's why I have very little respect for you. I said, you realize that some of my work has actually been published in the Royal Society for Chemical Engineers. I said, certainly not under the name Alien or Implant, but it has. I said, you think people are going to risk their careers on something that is not true? I said, don't think so. I said, so it doesn't matter really what you think. The whole world is happening around you, and you don't even know it. Well, he got all interested in me. Well, we wanted to talk, and so we did. We had a decent conversation then. But I talk to these people all the time, astronomers and others, and I will be nice and kind to them until they exhibit a lineage of stupidity that just cannot be dealt with, and so I just deal with it as they would me if they thought I was doing the same thing to them.
Don't you reach a point with some people where, and I do this all the time, you know, I meet people at conferences and we'll talk and they'll ask questions, and at some point, a lot of times you reach a point where you just want to say, go read a book and then come back and we'll talk. You know, look at...
I did one engineer that was a friend of a friend that was working for us one time years ago, and he said, I think you're the most arrogant person I've ever met. And I said, okay. And he says, I think you're wrong. I think you're stupid. I think, okay. I said, that's fine. I'm an engineer. I have an engineering background, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay. He said, see, there you're just being that. There you are being condescending and so on. I said, I'm acknowledging you're an engineer, and you're probably a pretty good one. And he says, but he just went on and on. And finally, after he studied some of the work that I did for about a week, he came back and said, I have never humiliated myself so bad. I said, you're the one that has been condescending. You're the one that's done all the stuff. I said, because you yourself, you're acting like some kind of psychic. I said, you people, I don't get it. I said, you're supposed to be scientists. I said, we're supposed to have this huge and immense respect for science because it's not afraid to look at anything. I said, some of the scientists on this planet are so terrified of, forget the word UFOs, you're scared to look at things like simple biology and things that simply, as one forensic scientist told Dr. Carla Turner, a friend of mine, before she passed away, when he looked at some of the biological evidence that was taken as a vaginal scraping from this lady who was raped by something, some animal-like creature, and this was witnessed by another abductee, by the way, they took this scraping, and I have the scrapings, by the way, and she told the story, and they looked at the evidence, and the forensic specialist told Candy, or Dr. Carla Turner, Candy as everybody knew her, that were friends of hers, said, Candy, this stuff cannot exist in this matrix. This compound cannot exist in this matrix. This is some of the scariest stuff I've ever seen. I don't want to be identified with it. I don't want to be... I don't even want to know what it is. I'm not even going to comment on it. I don't even want it. That's all I'll say about it. Don't ever attach me to, this is her own personal friend. So the question one has to ask is, what is it that he found that was so scary? He's a scientist. Scientists will look at anything. They look at science. That's the way it works. I've not found that to be completely true at all.
Yeah, it's supposed to be how it works, but I've met very few scientists who actually do follow that. I remember Bud Hopkins said that, you know, these debunkers are actually the true believers. They accuse us of being believers and not looking at evidence. But he said they're the ones, if they looked at evidence, they would have to admit that there is something to this.
Oh, there's no question about that. I debated one astronomer at a university, and they had him on the phone, had me on the phone, and he went on, and he right off the bat he said, anybody that believes in flying saucers, UFOs, he said, is the biggest, they're mentally ill, deranged, and all kinds of stuff. And I said, whoa, that's interesting. I said, do you have any specialized degrees in the medical field? No. He said, I'm an astronomer. I said, okay, we'll get to that in a minute. Do you have any specialized degrees in psychotherapy? No. Are you a psychiatrist? No. And about 20 different things, he said, no. And I said, so you're not qualified to make any determinations about anybody's mental health whatsoever, are you? No. So do you want to retract that statement? No. I said, okay, let's talk about you. He said, what about me? I said, you claim to be a scientist there at Northwest University. And I said, he said, I am. I said, no, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. You're a psychic. No, I am not. He said, well, let me answer me two questions. This is real important for me. I said, I'm a real simple guy, so just answer these for me, and I'll, you know, get out of your way here. I said, are you trying to tell me that no one at Northwest University or no astronomer whatsoever, and you stated this, has ever seen a flying saucer, UFO, or so? And he said, that is correct. I said, okay. I said, could you explain to me how thousands of UFO reports have been issued in the 1700s, 1800s, by astronomers, some of them from Northwest University, and yet you don't know anything about that? And he gets real quiet. I said, are you familiar with a gentleman who used to chair the... I asked him, first of all, I just said, are you familiar with a guy named J. Allen Hynek? And he said, no. I said, and you claim to be part of the astronomy department there at Northwestern University. He chaired that department, as I understand it. So either you do know, and you're lying, or you don't know, and you're ignorant. Which case, either one, you choose. This conversation is now over, because I'm either speaking to a liar or somebody so uninformed, I don't have any business talking to you. This ends the conversation. Oh, he was livid.
Oh, man, I wish I'd been there to see that one. That must have been sweet.
It was a riot. I loved it.
See, I just have this thing where people I used to work with, back when I worked in retail, would sometimes, you know, I'd have to ask for a weekend off to go to a UFO conference, and so the whole thing would come out, and I'd get all the eye rolling and everything. But then if I was alone in the break room with just one other person, they all wanted to know about it. I'd have all these questions. But
I went to a medical conference for hypnotic anesthesia, and someone was asking, we had a big dinner one night, and some people were asking, well, what do you do? And I looked at them and said, that's not really important. No, we want to know. I said, okay. I study medical and scientific evidence of those who allege human alien contact. I mean, no one moved. Several people said,
I can just imagine everybody just...
And then another lady jumped up, and she started screaming. She said, that is the most stupid, idiotic, insane, and she just berated me. It was terrible. And finally, I just went outside and, you know, looking at the stars and beautiful night out in Phoenix where this was at. And she came outside when no one was around and says, I had to put on that act in there. I said, I beg your pardon? She said, my son, he's being taken. I don't know who to turn.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was so horrible. I have the drawings that her son sent. He sent me the drawings of... I said, well, if these guys don't have long, big claws and big teeth and things like that, why did you draw an alien with big claws and whatever? Mm-hmm. And his mother asked him this, why are you doing this? Why are you sending these pictures to Mr. Sims of this alien that has big claws and things that you know are not true? He said, because they told me to do that. They said, if you ever draw any pictures of us the way we really are, we'll come back.
Oh, wow.
And the little kid said, so I put big claws and these big things, made him look like it's stupid.
No kidding.
There again goes back to the screensaver again.
Yeah.
He said, so that Mr. Sims wouldn't believe me. He says, but he does believe you. He says, he's articulate in deciphering drawings and handwriting. And he's looked at yours, and he thinks that your events are quite real.
Wow.
Just unbelievable that little kids like that have to tell these stories to their mom and dad. And I mean, I just,
yeah.
It just tears at me with claws.
Oh, my gosh. Boy, Boy, I hate to cut in at this point, but we actually have to go to break. So, gosh, leaving everybody with that image. Wow. Okay, well, we know what we're coming back to. We are going to take about an 8 to 10 minute break. You are listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. We're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, I'll be talking some more with Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. Don't go too far.
we're going to be taken serious about the UFO phenomena, we're going to have to come into the medical and science realm and present evidence. We can't go out there screaming, flying saucers, they're everywhere, UFOs, aliens have taken me. Where is the beef? Where's the evidence? And that's where the medical and scientific hat that I've chosen to use for years, that's a hat that I have to have. We've done 23 surgeries to date, and we've got two more planned this year, one in back east and one of them in Chile. And the important thing about the medical and science hat is it takes evidence of these events and brings it to reality. In other words, the UFO hat that we use, so to speak, we say everybody should believe our stuff because we see flying saucers or we saw this, we have film or whatever. The medical and scientific realm use totally different systems of thinking. And we have to ascribe to that, and we have to present our evidence in that form, or we're never going to be taken serious. And that, there's nothing wrong with that. The third hat that we need to consider wearing, at least temporarily, and I hope that the listeners tonight will wear these hats with me tonight as I answer some of these questions, so that they will get used to a hat that they maybe never wore before, and that's the cop hat. I'm also a licensed private investigator and have been for 25 years. My point is that that is a totally different system of investigating. As one scientist told me, he said, well, he said, I have a different set of rules and the rules of science. And I said, I understand that, sir, and I appreciate it totally. That's written in my first book, Alien Hunter, Evidence in Light, where I describe the three different levels of light that the alien sees in immediately. Actually, four: infrared, ultraviolet, visible light, and X-ray. I told the scientist, I said, you know, all that sounds great and how powerful the scientific method is and everything. I said, but when I come back behind you, in the down the road behind you, and you see that little red light come on, none of your science seems to work at that point. You're thinking, how am I going to get out of this ticket? You don't care about the scientific method. And, you know, the fact is, when we go to court, guess who they're going to believe, you or me? I said, so let's don't diminish what I do in any sense of the word, sir. I said, I respect what you do. I said, but the cop hat has a purpose, too. Then there's another hat that I wear, and I've talked very, very little about it because it's kind of a little out there right now, and it's an incredible hat that I find immense value, and it's called the profiler hat. For instance, if we take, I mean this in the kindest way, because you got to realize that I wear all these hats too, so I can't laugh at one hat and not be laughing at me because it's me too. Mm-hmm. I have a UFO hat too. But when a UFO guy, so to speak, brings his pictures and his film and all his stuff to the police officer and hands it to him and says, look at that, isn't that great? The cop looks at him and kind of smiles and thinks, what in the world is wrong with your brain? I mean, it's a totally different kind of thinking. It is. And there's nothing wrong with a guy with a UFO hat. I have one myself.
Yeah.
But I have to realize that's a UFO hat. It won't work on that cop, so quit trying to do that to him. You're going to have to put his hat on and think with his hat for a while, and you realize, oh, my gosh, rules of evidence are totally different here. Oh, my goodness, this is different. And that's okay. When the cop gets into a really heavy-duty case, and he's got, for instance, a serial killer, and he's, oh, my gosh, I've got to get this guy, and he's working on this case. This guy's murdering all these different men or women or children, and I've got to get him, you know. And he finally realizes this guy is just too far out there. He can't catch him. He calls in a profiler. A profiler looks at the cop about like the way the cop looks at the UFO guy. He just kind of smiles. Doesn't berate him, just kind of smiles at him. Takes the evidence, looks at it. And he'll tell you everything you want to know about the one who perpetrated that crime. He'll tell you the way he thinks, why he does what he does. He'll tell you why. All the other cop can tell you is how or what. This guy will tell you why. He'll get inside the headspace of this perpetrator. Now, we do that with the alien. We profile the alien.
Okay, so what can you tell us then about the aliens? I mean, what kind of profile can you come up with?
And that was good.
People ask me this all the time, too. Like, okay, well, who are they and why are they here? I'm like, I don't know. Ooh, first of all,
ooh,
I don't think there's...
Yes, you came right out of the chute with that one. Goodness sakes. Who are they? Well, that's a good question. They, to be very blunt with you, they have told us all kinds of stories. Now, since we're abductees and contactees, they're going to tell us stuff that we will buy into. Now, mind you, it's not going to be the truth, but it's going to be something that you can buy into. For instance, they have told us they're from the planet Banlon. What's that? It's a deodorant. It just happened to be in somebody's brain at the time this cosmic skinhead was talking to him, and this guy's thinking, he looked in his brain and saw the word Banlon, and said, we came from the planet Banlon. Well, that's a deodorant. I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. We're from Zeta Reticuli. Well, that's great, and I appreciate that, and there may be some good, reasonable evidence to support that, but the problem is, it's so far out there, we can't tell where you're really from there or not, can we? Isn't that convenient?
Yeah.
What does that mean? I got my cop hat on. I'm not picking on anybody. I'm not being a debunker here. I've got my cop hat on. Says I need more evidence, more than your. Okay, I'm a cop. If I go into a room and there's eight people in that room and there's a dead body laying there, and I ask everybody questions, I separate everybody and ask them these questions, and I get eight different stories on how that dead body got there. Guess how many people get to go to jail? All of them. At least seven are lying for sure, because that person didn't die eight different ways. So why can't I take that same rule of evidence, rule of thinking, to the alien who's lied to us for thousands of years? We're from Zeta Reticuli. We are gnomes. We are fairies. We are the jinn of Islam. We are this. We are that. No, you're not. If you've lied all these, now we know that they're not gnomes and fairies, don't we? But we know that the gnomes and fairies do weird things. They'll, like, take you away. In the real stories of the fairies, they're the little wee folk. Oh, yes, in Ireland. And they might not bring you back if they don't like you. And there are cases that have happened like that with abductees and contacts. That's not stuff that you want to put in print because that doesn't sell books. So we don't put mutilations and things like that in books. I'm actually going to do a book on mutilations, on human and animal mutilations. And it won't be the Walter Spina case and a few notable cases that are on the Internet. These are going to be cases that people don't know anything about, and they're still happening. They are rare, but my point is, these beings have not told us the truth and never have. They can't be from 90 different planets, you know, and 90 different stories, and every different person, they tell a different whopper to.
Well,
so why would I believe them if I put my cop hat on? Why would I believe that story? Well, I wouldn't. If I put my intelligence hat on...
How do you have any idea where to begin then? When you put that
profiler hat on, you realize that... Okay, let's go back to basics. Our opening statement. How do people know they're abductees, or how do abductees, what happens to them, and so on? They come back with cuts, marks, bruises, scars, memories, and things, or pieces of memories of things that are nonsensical, that don't make sense. A 3-foot-tall owl met me in the middle of the night while I was driving down the road, and I got out of my car. Why in the world would you get out of your car to meet a 3-foot-tall wounded owl walking down the street at 3 o'clock in the morning? Doesn't make any sense. It does if you're them, because you were appointed to be there, and you got there on time. Then you got this missing time, and you think you have this nonsensical dream of a 3-foot wounded owl. There was no 3-foot wounded owl. It wasn't an owl at all. The height is correct, and the large black eyes is correct, but it wasn't an owl. So, my point here is that these entities are not telling us the truth, and they haven't told us the truth for a long time. So, the cop hat doesn't buy it because it doesn't work. Not because he's a debunker, because he's not. It just doesn't work. The second thing is that the profiler looks at this. He will look at the cuts, scars, bruises, mutilations, all these different things in the UFO field. You know what he looks at when he sees that? He sees the inside of someone's head. And he sees who actually did it and what they're made out of. I touched on this a little bit in my book on implants. I'll really touch on it as I'm doing the second book on the invisible implants. There are visible implants and invisible. And my point about that is, is that these entities, when you put on that profiler hat, when you have that ability, he sees what he looks at. You look at these cuts, bars, and these bruises and scrapings and marks where people are tied down and held and all kinds of stuff, and they come back saying, I was in the school of higher consciousness, although I've got bruisings all over my arms where I was strapped down to a table. That was an interesting school. The point is that...
Okay, do contactees come back and show physical marks?
Of course.
Like this? I mean, very negative things, but still have this positive idea of what happened? That raises an interesting point that I just never really thought much about before. I guess I assumed contactees had this positive idea because they didn't have...
Some of them
much.
Do not have negative events.
Okay.
Some of them, and I'll give you a beautiful example here. I was doing handwriting analysis on all of my abductees in this support group. This one lady stands up in the middle of the support group, a contactee, and she says that many of the people in that group were abductees, which meant that they didn't buy into the alien Stockholm syndrome, basically. But she jumps up and says, all you people are, you're stupid, you're ignorant, you're unlearned, you're blah, blah, blah. And she just goes on with this alien speech. And pro-alien, pro-this, pro-that. And I said, young lady, I said, we're not here to berate anybody. I said, no one's view is better than another person's here. This is a support group. We are here to support each other. Regardless of what our events are or what we think they were, that's what we're here for. And she stands up and starts screaming and going on. And my senior investigator looks at me and he whispers, and I can see him moving his mouth as he whispers lowly. He says, is what she's saying true? And I said, no, because he knew I had just worked with her. And he says, what do you mean? I said, the last I saw her, she was screaming, lying on a table, screaming, leave my little brother alone.
Oh, my God.
But to her, when she opened her eyes, she had just come back from the school of higher consciousness.
Oh, wow.
In another case, a lady claimed to be in this wonderful metaphysical, wonderful realm of the aliens' headspace, and very happy about it, and hey, that's whatever floats your boat. But the problem was that there happened to be a witness involved in that case, another guy, a guy who was there in her event as well, and he drew a picture of her on the table. And a picture of her is nude, which they do, they strip everybody nude there. It's just like Nazis did, a lot of the Jews and others. I mean, it's to demoralize you and to make you be nothing.
Very intimidating.
Oh, it is. The whole program, I mean, this is science, of course. Oh, really? And Nazis were doing science, right? That's good science,
yeah.
Huh? I don't believe a word of that. I don't buy any of this. So he draws he paints, he's an artist, not a great one, but a pretty lot better than I am, and he paints this picture of her on this table with this 6.5-foot-tall mantis being looking right next to her face, right in her eyes, giving her her screensaver. And she thought she was in the school of higher consciousness going through this wonderful metaphysical experience. But according to the witnesses, that's not exactly what happened. But the good thing is, if I can say this in a kind way, for her sake, I'm glad that that's what she thinks happened. Because I'm telling you, it would just absolutely destroy this woman to know that something else, way beyond anything she could grasp, had occurred to her. Not all contactees, nor do all abductees have negative experiences. They don't all have negative, but some of them do, and some of them are so horrific that I'm not going to sit here and scare half your people to death with some of these horror stories, including my own life.
Okay. Well, I do. There is a question that has been popping up like every 10 seconds on the message board. And it was something that we had talked about in the first hour, and I was kind of waiting for the conversation to sort of lead around and get back into this. When you're talking about these aliens sort of making people believe they're having a more positive experience, well, more positive than what? I mean, what is the purpose of what they're doing? And the question that's coming on the message board is that you referred to this milk factory in the first half. And they want to know what's the purpose of the milk factory. What are they actually here for?
Oh, your listeners are smart. Love smart
again,
people.
You know,
I love these people. They're putting some hats on tonight, and some of them probably already bought those hats with them and already think this way anyway. And so they got good questions, and they should. These are great questions, and they need to be thrown in the face of every investigator, myself included, and to get some kind of answers. And I'll give you a wonderful answer. I'm an overly developed right brain dominant person, which means I probably don't even have a left brain. But the point is that right brain people tend to tell stories, and so I'm going to tell you a little story that's going to answer this question in a very powerful way. There was a family in Houston, Texas, a group of abductees, whole family, and I won't go into the details, but the events just destroyed the family. Now, here's the amazing thing. Several people in the family thought the events were powerful, wonderful, and positive. The others thought it was far less than that and horrified. The mother wouldn't talk to anybody for over a year. The kids split up. They were old enough, they were over 16, and they left the home. It split the family right down the middle. Everybody just left. The father ended up in a Tri-County in the psych ward part of the time for a severe depression for 14 years. And finally asked his two doctors if I could work with him since I was skilled in NLP, hypnotherapy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which they agreed to my shock and amazement. And I worked with him, and about an hour and a half later, he was free of his anxiety because it was UFO-related, and we dealt with that issue and got it taken care of. That's the wonderful news. The story goes on. I asked the mother, would you like to talk about this? You know, you're welcome to. This has destroyed your family, and everybody left. My gosh, what do you do? And she's, no, not interested, and I'll never talk to you, and so on. I said, okay, no problem. And about a year later, she contacted me and said, do you remember me? I said, yes, ma'am, I do. You were the people that saw the strange-looking UFO that night outside your house, and you live on a little airstrip right outside Houston, and so on and so on and so on. She said, yes, that's us. I said, okay. She said, I want to find out what happened to me. I said, okay. So I brought my assistant, a female, Patrice, and she started setting up camera, and she says, who is that woman? I said, that is Patrice. She's my assistant. She said, well, I don't want her here. And I said, young lady, there are certain ways we do things, and I do not work with people I do not know, particularly a woman, without a female present, period. It's never going to happen. And so she says, well, I don't like it. And I said, these rules and procedures are set up to help you and to protect me and to protect you and help you get to the bottom of what happened to you. If you don't like that, we're going to pack up and leave, and this meeting is over. And she said, okay, she can stay. And so she turned the camera on. I said, she will not bother you, interfere in any way, or even say anything. She's here as an observer. So all of a sudden, the lady says, well, what are we going to do? And I said, we're going to do some closed-eye processing. She said, what's that like? And I said, well, close your eyes.
And process.
Next thing she knew, she was slapping behind herself, saying, stop that. I said, stop what? And then she mentions this is so important for your listeners to hear this clearly. She said, my doctor. And I said, your what? She said, my doctor, he's trying to touch my... She's a very moral lady. And I said, your what? And she says, you know. I said, no, I don't know. He's trying to touch my rear end. I said, your doctor? Now, this is a screensaver that was left by them to her. She believed her doctor was trying to molest her. How'd you like to go to court with that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, immediately I knew what was going on, and I'm going to... Long story short, she keeps slapping behind herself, and Patrice is just beside herself. She said, this is incredible. I said, "What? Wait a minute. Wait, what's this? I said, you're not going to believe it. What's this? And finally I said, okay, you're in your... Where are you at? She said, we're in my doctor's office. And I said, okay. That's great. I said, are you absolutely sure? She said, absolutely. This is important. See, she doesn't know. Absolutely. I said, okay. How many corners are in your doctor's office? And she looks around with this puzzled look on her face. There aren't any corners. I said, that's not true. You know there are corners in your doctor's office, and I want you to count every one of them and tell me right now. I order you to do that. There aren't any corners. How can there be no corners in my doctor's office? The screensaver memory is that it's her doctor who's touching her. And the story's going to get a lot worse here real quick. She realizes she still can't put two and two together. It's not an office. It's a doctor-like place, but it isn't, and it is her doctor, but not her MD. It's the alien doctor. So here's how the deception worked. And finally, he's got her laying on the table, and he's molesting her. And it is so bad. She cries and cries. It is. I've got the film of it. It just makes you go to tears listening to it. She finally says, she finally opened her eyes and says, "Why did you do that to me? I didn't do anything to anybody." And she's crying. She can't figure out why in the world would somebody, her doctor, she still doesn't get it. She doesn't realize. Because I finally asked her, I said, "If you see your doctor at any time," I said, "Do you see him?" She says, "No." And I said, "Well, if you see him or any part of him, let me know immediately." She says, "Okay." And all of a sudden she jumps and says, "Oh, my God, long white fingers going toward my legs." She starts crying and so on. So that was her doctor's hands. It wasn't a glove or anything like that. It was the alien's actual hand. He molested her for this period of time. She is just horrified and a very moral lady, just mortified by this experience. And she looks at me and she cries and cries. She says, "Why did you do that to me?" And I said, "You know, I'm probably never going to see you again. You'll probably never talk to another UFO anybody anywhere. It took you a year to get here already. And so, for your sake, I'm going to tell you exactly why he did what he did." And she sat there, she was wiping her tears, and Patrice is sitting there with her mouth open, like, because she didn't know either. And I said, "You need to think of him as a tape recorder. And all I said, he has no genitalia. He didn't enjoy it any more than you did, because he doesn't get it anyway. But he knows exactly what to do to elicit the exact sexual response and passions from you that he needs for his boss, who ordered this event to occur. Think of him as a tape recorder, and this wonderful, quote-unquote, experience, it's horrible, but for the one who ordered it, it's a wonderful thing." And I touched this in my book, in the Alien Hunter books. It just said, I said, this character goes back to his hexagonal tube and hibernates on these feasts that his little minions captured from you. Our feelings, our thoughts, our emotions, our most private things. He is the one who authors these nighttime excursions, and the author and writer of the script in which we're a part. And the fact is that this is just part of a program by him. And you're just another one of the things that he feeds on. You know, he's the honey man. He's the one that comes to steal the honey.
So you're saying that they're actually not only coming to take eggs and sperm, they're not just taking physical samples, but they're actually collecting emotions or energy.
You have to think of this stuff, these passions, these emotions, these horrors, these extreme fears, and all these other things are nothing but huge passions that somebody, not the alien, forget the alien, he's just a minion, he's just the pizza guy. You're just a pizza. He's collecting these things so that they can be, for lack of a better term, replayed. Imagine whoever sent him, this is like a drug to them. "Well, they haven't come back and gotten me in 6 months or a year." He's probably been working on that last one all that time. When he gets out or needs some more, he's coming back. He'll send whomever to come back to get whatever it is he wants.
Okay, who do you mean by he? Who's sending these guys out?
Here we go again. In the UFO world, they have a view that there are, for instance, like the little alien you see, the little 3-foot-tall guy, and then there's a taller one that looks just like him called the Doctor, and then there's this mantis being, and then there's this Nordic guy, then there's this reptile guy, and then there's this Bigfoot guy, and there's this all these different ones, about 7 primary kinds, and everybody thinks in the UFO field, this is where I differ from most people in the UFO field right here. This is where we part company. They think, most of them, that these are like alien species out there. And I said, well, there are two huge problems with this. Number one, they've all been seen on the same craft at the same time by eight different witnesses. And I said, and those are not the only people who've seen them together. My point is, they're all on the same database, they're all functioning together, and they're all in this together. And the fact is, I call them the usual suspects, and I show the lineup of all these aliens I just described. The usual suspects in that lineup are not the problem. They're just the people carrying out the modality or the purpose of those who sent them. The people in the UFO community think those guys are the problem or are our saviors or whatever they are, whatever you want to lump them into, that they're it, so to speak. Well, they're not. They're not even close. They are nothing but something that's been this simply carries out the will of others who have sent them, others more powerful and greater than they are. Now, the point of this thing, my illustration here, and people say, well, no, they're different races of aliens. I said, well, how do you know this? Put your cop hat on for a second. Get your UFO hat off. How do you know that? What convinces you that this is true? Well, because they're different kinds. I said, okay, that's fine. There are different kinds of these guys. I said, so if I take you to a car lot and show you seven different kinds of Ford, you're going to think there are like seven different races of Fords out there? Is that it? Why do I think your thinking is not consistent here with the data? What you're looking at here are models that do certain things, have certain capabilities, and are designed for this purpose. The alien, quote-unquote, that we see here, the alien generic term of these seven primary race-type guys everybody refers to as a race, or races, what if, in fact, they're not the alien, so to speak? They're just the byproduct or the genetic manufacturer of that experiment or simply the result of the thinking and the manufacture of the custodians of that mentality. What if we've got it all wrong?
Well, see, that's what bothers me when I ask you questions like, well, how do you know where to begin when the only thing we know for sure is that they're lying? Or we know...
Well, okay, now where that information comes from, again, this is to me paramount for your audience tonight. I'm not saying that what I say is the real answer and it's the answer. What I'm saying is I don't care who anyone buys into what I'm saying or not. What I care about is that you try these different hats on and see if they work for you. And when you say they lie, what you've done is you've taken off your UFO hat and you put on your police hat. It doesn't buy into every, just because somebody tells a whopper or a great story doesn't make it true. That just doesn't work.
Right.
And the best illustration I can give you that is I love this illustration. Another one of my little stories is a caveman. We're going to thaw this guy out. Let's say we can thaw this guy out of the side of a cliff, and there he is. He's all unfrozen, and he's going to come home with me tonight. I'm going to take him home with me, and I'm going to show him how smart I really am. He's got a club and jerked some hides off animals and wearing that, so he's not very smart, obviously. And he's going to come to my house, and as soon as we come into my cave, so to speak, my interesting cave called a house, and I flip on the light switch, the guy goes, oh, son, amazing, oh, oh. He's almost worshiping me because I have magical powers. I can control light and darkness instantly. I know how to do that. I have tremendous powers, and it's proof because he saw it with his own eyes. It's true. And that sounds great, but the fact is, you know, I don't know how to make electricity, but he doesn't know that. If I don't tell him, he won't be any wiser, will he? I don't know how to make a light switch either. You know, I can't even repair the stuff. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I didn't make the electric plant where we get electricity. I didn't do any of that stuff. I'm just a clown who happens to be standing there in a room flipping a switch to some guy who's wearing rags and hides and has a big club and doesn't understand what a light bulb is. And so that makes me a genius. That makes me superior. I'm from another dimension and another age and another planet and so on, so far superior. No, I'm from Earth just like he is. And then it gets better. Then he says, oh, this is incredible. Oh. And I open my ice box and he says, oh, how can you do this? You have the it's all frozen. And, yeah, I know I can do that. We have tremendous powers here, you know. He doesn't get it, you know. And then what's even better is all of a sudden I decide to turn the TV on.
I was just going to say, show him a movie. You know, show him a TV.
I'm going to show him 1 million B.C. He's going to love that one because now he realizes I'm a time traveler. Right? You see how easy it is to deceive someone because you have a tech or you have a skill or you have something they don't know, and so therefore they're going to jump to these bizarre conclusions about what you are and who you are, and you are just a cosmic messiah, you little cosmic, you're so wonderful. Mutilated my brother, but that's okay, you treated me good, so that's all that really matters, you know. I got it, and he didn't, you know. Why does this not work for me? So all of a sudden, you hear this, the news comes on, Moscow in flames, missiles heading toward U.S., news at 10. Wait, that doesn't work. We're in nuclear war. All of a sudden, boom, 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 these big things go off. And guess who's the smartest guy in the room now? After the war's over, who's the survivor?
Yeah, who's the one?
There isn't any more electricity, smart man. You can flip all the switches you want, but there's no more juice. Those electromagnetic weapons have destroyed all of that. And the guy with the club is the only one that's going to be able to survive at all. So you tell me who the smartest guy is. So therefore, the aliens are far smarter than we are. They must be. Because of what? I mean, what evidence do you have to support that? And so we have to go back to this critical thinking and ask hard questions. How do we know that to be true? And when you ask those wonderful questions, each one of those questions, I can literally sit here and tell you where what hat you're wearing when you ask them. And if we're asking all the questions that come from the UFO hat, we're not going to get very far in finding out who these aliens are. Because we're going to be so busy looking at pictures and things and going to conferences and all these fun things, which I love to do and enjoy and love going to them. But that's not going to tell me the big questions, the big answers. It's never going to cause me to ask them unless I wear these other hats.
Okay. Another question from the message board, and this is a case, I'm glad somebody brought this up because I wanted to ask you about this too. The last time you were on my show, which was quite a while ago, it was well over a year, we talked about fluorescence, and you were telling me about a case with a handprint appearing in glass. And I'm hoping I remember this correctly. Someone actually passed through this window or glass door and left a fluorescent handprint.
You've got two stories mixed, but they are wonderful stories, and I will clarify this and give you the answer to your question and to the story about the hand in the window. The hand in the window came to me by a police officer, a Harris County officer, excuse me, was one of my abductees, and he called me from Friendswood, Texas, right outside Houston. And he says, you need to get over here right away. And he had it's a part-time business. He had a workout salon where you could work out and drink health food and, I mean, eat all this wonderful, great stuff. And he was real built, big muscle guy, you know, really tough, really good-looking guy. And I went over. Everybody was leaving. And he had a black piece of plastic taped over this little window about 5 foot tall, about 2 foot wide. And I said, Why do you have your window taped up? That doesn't make any sense. These windows are, you know, they really show your building off. He said, because it scares people. And I said, what do you mean? When everybody's gone, now it's rained outside, so it's a little misty, which is good, and the sun's starting to come up a little bit, and you can, when he takes that plastic down, you can see these little gnarled fingers and hand and a forearm and an elbow of something that stood approximately 32 inches tall, that apparently came through that window after him. He said, how in the world can the image of that much of him be in the window? I said, there is a phenomena whereby people can even be photographed in a, near a window. For instance, if it's lightning and you're standing next to a window, it's possible for you to get your image, a faint image of your face, photographed into that window by that process. I said, it requires a huge amount of light in certain circumstances for that to occur. I said, apparently that happened behind the entity that was coming through the window. Most abductees and contactees report, it was really a bright light, and then, yeah, but let's slow down. What about that bright light? See, well, that's what apparently caused the image to be inside the window. So I looked at it, and I'm sitting there scratching my head. Whoa, this is really good. I said, can I have your window? He said, sure. So I hired some guys, gave them $300. They took the window out, cut the plate out for me that had the image in it, and I still have it. And I even have it on film. And it's, some people tout some of the best evidence they've ever seen of alien anything. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But the point is, I have it. But that is an image that looks kind of like a holographic image of a hand in three dimensions inside that glass. Now, fluorescence is different than that. Fluorescence, the best way to think of that is, if you're abducted, one of the things that the alien does is to, when he touches you, if he physically touches you, and I'm going to get in a little trouble here, but this makes people mad, about 80% of your abduction experiences, you didn't go anywhere. And generally speaking, this is the case.
Okay.
80% of the time, we didn't go anywhere. They came, they were there, it was a real event, something happened, but they probably didn't touch you, and you didn't go anywhere. No, I was back in the school of higher consciousness, or I was back on the slab, or what? If you were, and you were physically touched, which is generally about 20% of the time, they will leave, you have to think of it as an alien fingerprint or a sweat-like material that they leave on you when they touch you. And if you can get to these people within 24 hours and with a black light, which I have outlined in my book, Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Light, and you put this black light next to them, it's going to be around 267 nanometers, but any regular black light is going to show it if it's there. You will see a fluorescent trace, and there are different kinds. First, the most common is usually fingerprints, an impression of a finger on these people that lights up like a Christmas tree. It is the most beautiful color you've ever seen, where the individual has touched you and usually held you down while somebody was doing something to you. The other possibility is some people see in the visible range, because they didn't know about black lights and this sort of thing, which this is something I discovered in 1992.
Well, unless you had a good Doors poster, you know, not a lot of people have.
That's true. This is one of the people that in my book on Evidence and Light, there is a case of a young boy, one of my abductees here in Houston. His father, this kid had night terrors. I mean, he cried and screamed ever so often. He would have these horrific dreams that were just like these horrible beings coming through the wall. And his daddy didn't realize it was a true story. And the daddy was an abductee and couldn't deal with it himself. Now, the funny thing about it, the dad is an artist and went out there and painted with black light poster paint, a beautiful picture on the kid's wall. And he put a little, this is so funny, it's in my book, he put a little Darth Vader helmet, which they made a little Darth Vader helmet with a black light in it. And so it would kind of be a night light and would light up his little wall, and so he wouldn't have night terrors. He just loved his son, so he's helping him out. Kid felt really comforted. One night, the aliens came through the wall again. The thing that was so stunning to him is that they all glowed the most brilliant green on parts of their bodies, particularly their hands where they'd touched and so on. And he was just stunned, because they glowed like the blacklight poster paint. The funny part about the whole thing is they all walked over to the Darth Vader helmet and began to look at it, and they looked at it for a long time, real puzzled. Really bizarre. Makes you wonder who dreamed that Darth Vader guy up and what experiences he may have really had.
Oh, I'd love to know what they thought of it.
Yeah. Well, that's how this young man, even before I discovered it, inadvertently discovered the fluorescence, because he found the fluorescence on him when they touched him. Of course, he could see it when they were touching him. But he never relayed that until I had him under hypnosis and worked with him. And, of course, he found that, and we found fluorescence on him and others and myself and, you know, other. It's true of anybody that's been physically touched by these entities. And you have to get to them within a 24-hour period, because usually the fluorescence will dissipate or be absorbed by the body within a 24-hour period. Some, in rare cases, it will last up to 2 weeks. Some of the fluorescence that you'll see on these people is, in fact, not a fingerprint or a holding by them, but, in fact, is often a procedural, and that's listed in the book in great detail, a procedural thing, such as one lady, I'm looking at her photograph right, a photograph right now of her fluorescence, and on her arm, she has fluorescence, a procedural mark on her arm, but on above it, it looks like a word that's written in reverse in Russian, in fluorescence. Now, do the aliens speak Russian? Probably, yeah, they speak everything in that sense of the word. They get into your consciousness.
Right.
But do they write Russian and that sort of thing? No, they don't. So what does this mean? Well, it means probably, or possibly, my best answer, cop hat on here, not UFO hat, because you can get into some pretty wild theories about that with that UFO hat. The cop hat on says it is possible that these entities were handling this Russian abductee, or maybe an American. This happened in Houston. Russian abductee, while this lady's on the craft, handled their necklace, which had this word on it in Russian, laid it down, and this lady, unbeknownst to her, placed her arm upon it, leaned on it, and that's why you have this form of Russian on her arm in fluorescence.
So
not because they put it on her, but probably because she did herself inadvertently.
Right, the necklace acted like a stamp.
Exactly. And that makes more sense to me than anything. But the point is that if I tell people, look, if you can get the fluorescence off of you, if you can wash it, scrub it, and get it off you, I'm not interested. Don't even call. If this stuff is real, you can't get it off, you can't scrub it off, you can't get it off with a chemical or any other process, and we've had doctors and others try it, and it won't work. It penetrates your skin subdermally on contact. The only way you can get that, and we ask people to do so, or get someone medically to help them with this, is to do a skin scraping and onto a piece of clear notebook, white paper, so that you can see the sampling and have somebody put black light next to it, so you can, when the scrapings actually will fluoresce, if you get the right amount of it, and so on. And then, of course, we want to test that, and we've got some samples we're working on. But that's where fluorescence comes from. There's two primary kinds. One is by touch, casual contact, and two, a procedural system. We've even had one MD that had three marks on her shoulder and one above it, four marks total. And she was absolutely stunned. This was in 1993. This was the second case I had on fluorescence in 1993, I believe it was, and an MD, and this was in Phoenix. Now, the amazing thing about it, after I worked with her that night, and this is funny, because she's a contactee, for the most part, liked these guys, and felt like they were doing good, benefiting, or whatever, you know, if that's what was going on. She avoided me like the plague for 3 days, wouldn't come around my table.
Uh-oh.
I didn't know who she was, didn't know she was a doctor. Then later, I'm just practically packing up about midnight that night, working with a client, and this guy brings her over and says, you need to meet this lady, and I realize that's the one who's been walking around for 3 days and avoiding me like the plague and visiting everyone else.
Okay.
So, bottom line is, she turns out that she's an abductee herself. The next day, a few days later, she takes off, and she's got fluorescence all over her breast, chest, thighs, vaginally, all over her shins and top of her foot. And I mean, it's like she's laid down in it. And she is absolutely mortified. But she sends me samples. I love doctors.
Well, that's good. This is like the ones you were talking about before who won't look at the evidence. I mean, here's one who actually did.
Well, she had to.
All right.
I mean, I'm sitting there. The only way she found fluorescence on her is I asked her, I said, do you mind if I, when I was examining her, she'd mind if I use a black light to look at the exposed skin of your face, neck, and your arms. And she said, well, of course, please do. What are you looking for? I said, just sometimes we find things. And I didn't tell her what it was. And she lit up like a Christmas tree.
Okay.
She said, what the blankety blank is that? And I said, that's just some of that stuff we find.
Oh, boy.
And she took off for 3 days. Now, this is bizarre. She took off for 3 days. She called me later, a few days later. And she said, I've been missing for 3 days. And I said, what do you mean? She says, I just felt like I should leave and take off. I said, you left your husband and everything just took off? She said, yes, I did. And she said, Mr. Sims, I have fluorescence. I went out and got one of those black lights. I have fluorescence all over. And I said, do you have vaginally as well? She said, yes, I do.
Oh, man.
I didn't want to tell her what had happened. I mean, I didn't. It's one of those things where you hope they don't ask any questions.
Yeah.
They don't want to know, and you don't want to tell them.
Oh, gosh. Well, Daryl, we are actually out of time, and we're a couple minutes over, but that was really fascinating, and I didn't want to jump in. I hate to cut you off, but we are going to have to stop because there's another show coming up after this. Where can people find out more about these cases? If someone wants to
All they have to do is just go to alienhunter.org. alienhunter.org and simply type on my name, which will be Alien Hunter there, and it'll email me, and I'll answer all your questions. Or you can look at we've got two implant cases right there on the site. You can click on them and look at the film footage of implant cases that are in situ right there in the people as we're there. One of them at Roswell and one of them in Brazil.
Wow. Okay. Definitely check that out, people. And, Daryl, thank you again for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you so much, Karen, and God bless you and your audience.
Thanks so much. And thanks to all of the listeners. You guys were really popping with questions tonight. I was having a hard time keeping up with all of them, actually, and I love it when you guys get involved, so thanks. That was terrific. Okay, you are listening, have been listening, to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. My guest this evening was alien hunter Daryl Sims. Stay tuned now for the Joyner Report, coming up next with Angela Joyner. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and see you next week.